You're listening to the best possible taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
My name is Simon from Dunluce Distillery. We're based in Port Ballantrae on the north coast of Northern Ireland. And I guess what we're most known for is our gin, the Shoreborn Gin, which was the first to launch on the Causeway Coast. And since then, we have developed a limoncello made from Sorrento lemons that I import directly from Italy and peel by hand. It's a wonderful, wonderful, versatile spirit. And then I guess after that, our next progression was arancello, which is made with orange peel, and it's very refreshing and a lovely zingy flavour. Since then, we have recently launched our new cold brew coffee liqueur in collaboration with Causeway Coffee. They're fellow members of Taste Causeway, which is a wonderful group, and I get so much inspiration from my fellow members there. It's great just to collaborate with them and hear new ideas, and it gives me a few ideas to be going on with whenever I'm launching a new product. If you're interested in finding out more about my story, please go to dunlucedistillery.com and also check me out on Facebook, Dunluce Distillery, and on Instagram at Dunluce Distillery.
Cheers.
Chin chin.
Salut.
Schleiter.
Welcome back to the best possible taste, Ireland's longest running food and drink radio show and podcast. I'm Sharon Noonan, and you just heard Simon Hogg from Dunluce Distillery, as tonight's show is a celebration of Taste Causeway, an All-Ireland Foodie Destination Award winner and an accredited slow food destination in Northern Ireland. And my next guest is not only a food producer in the region, but also curates unique dining experiences. So let's find out more from Musselburgh Sea Salt's Claire O'Kane.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious. Mmm. Claire, it's absolutely brilliant to have you on the show today, because a couple of weeks ago, whenever I was up on the North Antrim coast, I met you and you told me a bit about your business, but I also met you at one of the experiences that you offer. So let's start first with Musselburgh Sea Salt. Tell me a bit about it and how it all started.
Thanks, Sharon, for having me today. Yeah, so Musselburgh Sea Salt, I like to describe as the happy accident. So for me, I have a background as a psychologist and customer service, so that was my field. And I happened to be doing a product range called Honora Cain. And Honora Cain means honest warrior. So my background was always helping people to come into their own power and confidence and things like that. And I discovered for this particular fair that I needed a product from Northern Ireland. So as a sea salt based product, it was included Epsom salts and a combination of salts, but I had nothing from Northern Ireland. So I began to research, first of all, sea salt in Northern Ireland to see if I could find a producer. And hence there was no producers in Northern Ireland. So I became the first to produce sea salt in Northern Ireland from ancient times. So we've one of the oldest pans here in Ballycastle at Pans Rock, and I began to produce it. So what started off as my granny's saucepan and a 2 litre bottle of water from the beach has turned into what we have now is the brand Musselburgh Sea Salt. And that's how we began.
It's amazing that nobody else had done it in Northern Ireland, because there's a number of them down here in the Republic of Ireland. So, you know, congratulations on having the foresight to be the number one. That's absolutely brilliant. Tell me about your process then. You started with a 2 litre bottle. I presume you don't go down with little bottles to the seashore.
No, but what was brilliant over, if you can describe anything over that COVID, was we had a time to slow down. And I remember it was a time of going to the beach, and it was like my daily ritual of how the sea had always helped me in my own personal conditions that I would have health-wise. So when I look back, it was a natural, it was very obvious to me as to why I didn't produce sea salt. But for us, the production will always be by hand. And that's thanks to having our belief and values is to have zero impact on the sea. And we can't do that when we pump or you know, bring in any other way. So we will always hand harvest, and we will continue to do so. And we've built a model now which will allow us to hand harvest, but to scale within, you know, sea salt's an $18 billion industry. So what will happen will help us is we will be able to maintain our beliefs, our integrity, and still be able to keep those things thanks to just taking our time and building our process. So it's all by hand, and it's all naturally processed. So you won't get the perfect flake from Muzzard and sea salt, but we believe that's a small price to pay for nature producing the sea salt into perfectly imperfect, you know.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Ballycastle there. You've gone with the name Mossenden. So tell us about the significance of the name.
The significance is Mossenden Temple, which is actually an 18th century library here on the north coast. So it's one of Northern Ireland's most iconic, and I think it's the most second in a pole photographed building in the whole of Ireland. So it was always my place of peace. It was always, no matter where I went in the world or no matter what I was going through, the minute I just saw Mossenden Temple or stood on those stood on the cliff edge with the, you know, the wind coming in, and it was always that place where I could take a breath. So whenever I began to harvest Mossenden sea salt, it was around Mossenden Temple. So for me, it was that natural progression into calling it Mossenden Temple because it was somewhere special that I held. And also when I look back, my parents, you know, had a couple of summers. They had a takeaway quite close to Mossenden Temple. So I'd have spent summers and they would have occupied us at the beach. You know, we would have spent summers on the beach, or they would have drove past it and told us stories about it just to keep us occupied in the car we look back on. But that name was always there, I should say.
I grew up in Ballymena, so if we were going to the seaside, it would have been to Portrush, Port Stewart. You know, we went to the Giant's Causeway, the Bushmills Inn, the Carrick Aread Rope Bridge. Those were the sorts of places that we went on days out in the summer. And whenever you say about Mossenden Temple being a really iconic building, and it is used in all the Discover Northern Ireland promotional material, videos online. And I had seen it a million times on the TV or in brochures, but I'd never actually visited it. And to be honest, I didn't really know where it was. And it is, it's a National Trust property.
Yes, it's a National Trust property, and the National Trust, the reason why is because they used to open it, but as you can imagine, it's right on the cliff, Sharon. So you know, we have to look after that building because it's important to keep it. So it is a closed building, and that's another progression for us as Mossenden Sea Salt. As a local producer, we actually have an exclusivity with Mossenden Temple now to do dining experiences inside. So we hold that exclusivity. So it's a wonderful progress for us to be able to, you know, go inside. So we're one of the few, and they will open in World Heritage Days, and they do open for concerts or events like myself with a taste of Mossenden.
Well, just to explain to listeners that might not be familiar with what the National Trust is, or equivalent down south would be something like the Office of Public Works. So they have a responsibility to take care of these heritage sites. And that means, and no offense to anybody listening that might be OPW or National Trust, sometimes it can be quite challenging to get them to understand when you're trying to do something because they're so protective of a site. So tell me about the process of bringing your experiences to the temple, because like it's a beautiful dome shape, and we must ask you in a minute about the history of it. It's not a particularly big space, but it's not teeny tiny, but to do events in it can only hold a limited amount of people. So then when you're talking about doing a dining experience in it where there's no toilet facilities, there's no kitchen, there's no table and chairs in it all the time. So, you know, there was a lot of work must have gone on behind the scenes discussions with the National Trust to bring them along with this concept that you had?
Yes, well, first of all, the National Trust is changing their processes, but I've never experienced anything other than a partnership with them from the very beginning. So for me, that partnership began with this idea, which the first time that they heard of, so I might not be the right particular approach for this, because my progression with them was a natural progression. So the National Trust to me was a partnership from the beginning. We had met with the team at Musardon Temple, and I shared my ideas. And the first time we shared this idea with them, they were just like, yes. And yes, there is a lot of different rules and regulations, but this is an 18th century library. It's the most iconic. And let's not forget, every single site that the OPW or National Trust have has historical significance. So you can understand, yes, maybe they're not open to be able to hosting these events and things, but they are changing and they have a real purpose behind what they're doing. So instead of looking at it as kind of restrictive, I've always looked at it as, you know, I go into the National Trust property, I get to do a dining experience in Musardon Temple. And you kind of mentioned there's no electricity or all of these things. Yes, those are true. But what we have done is created a magical luxury experience that can be for your average everyday listener, right through to whatever budget that's involved. And we do that by attention to detail. So we do have toilets. We have a lovely luxury car that takes us from the toilet right up to the steps of Musardon Temple. And that car is fully electric, so we're sustainable. We have a kitchen inside, so that chef comes into that kitchen, to that space, and cooks inside. Eva, our last chef, is actually a lady who did the Sligo food trail, and Eva is fantastic chef, so she's cooking in there. So it's just using your imagination and creativity to be able to transform a space. And that's one of the biggest passions that I have, is to be able to repurpose space about land. And it's be able to use it. So we have a number of locations all over the Causeway and Ireland that we do these experiences in. And it's just to repurpose that. But to go back to your question, Sharon, for us, the event of A Taste of Musardon was one of the first events within the National Trust that began to bring in that relationship of using and repurpose. So I believe the lady in the team that was working alongside with me, Niamh, they now look at A Taste of Musardon as the kind of pilot experience and learn from that experience. So we created something completely different in Musardon Temple. But I think the main focus of how I became a partner of the National Trust was that my business is sustainable, it has a purpose, and it's not just offsetting, it's not just using this lingo of sustainability or, embracing all these things that become very popular now. To us, it's our ethos. So for us, it was about a community and using this. And that's how we began. So our experiences, yes, you can have four international guests having a luxury experience inside. But you also can have, we have engagements there, we have locals. It was so important for us to have the local demographic in terms of North Coast, Ireland. You know, that was so important for us because this building is so iconic. It becomes part of people's lives. It's where my sister had, you know, everybody's story is the same. My grandfather grew less than 3 miles away. Go back into our ancestors of the O'Cattons, they would have potentially, had that land in the, you know, the 16th. So there's so much that becomes with this. So there becomes a responsibility. So I suppose I can appreciate the National Trust reluctance, or the OPW's reluctance, to allow these because they have to be protected. And it has to be the right particular thing that will, share that story of Musardon Temple.
Well, to come back then to the chef, so you build this sort of kitchen inside the temple so that the chef has the facilities that he needs. So I suppose if you imagine a restaurant with an open kitchen that you can see them cooking, there's a bit of that, but there are restrictions on what they can make and what you can serve, for example, no red wine.
for those 2 hours, red wine is not a big thing, or beetroot. Do you know? So when you look at it, you know, it's 4,000 pounds a tile, and these tiles is from the 18th century. You know, when people realize and you tell the story, and when you're watching the sunset, which we have done for the last number of years of the summer solstice, and you're sitting in one of the most northern dens, and you know, all you have is the sunset and the sea. Red wine doesn't even come into it. Types of food that we have, you don't even miss it. I mean, we have all local food. It's a la carte to begin with. But what's amazing is we try and be as personal to the people that's coming as possible. We don't put our menu up. We put a surprise. But we also have a particular approach that the chef will do everything they possibly can to cater for their tastes and their needs. And that's the big thing. So we actually had one event where the chef, unbeknownst to myself, decided he would do the whole meal vegan. So all the people that was inside Muzzin Temple, you know, they had meat substitute, they had all of these things they didn't know. And I didn't actually know until the morning of it. So I was like, oh, this is a risk. I'm not sure I would have. It was fantastic because the food was so delicious that it didn't matter. You know, and that's the difference. So it's like you can look at restrictions, red wine, beetroot, tea or coffee, but when you're in there, it's the magic of the experience of it and the taste of the food. You know, and another thing we do is compostable plates, which people just don't. It was actually from Paula, first experience. And one of the things is compostable plates. And we've had one person say, I would rather, I think it's not a good look. And I said, okay, that's interesting. We would rather do good than look good. And we do look good. And that's the difference because that was just someone's approach to it. It's all over there. So we have a real responsibility. And you say about the kitchen, we have a perfectly operating kitchen, but it takes a skillful chef. So not everybody can cook in Muzzin Temple and not everybody has that, you know, skill to be able to do it. But for us, Eva, she's fantastic at the moment for us and she'll be our resident chef this summer.
Tell me a bit about the history before we finish up about, you know, why Muzzin ended up there, who built it, why they built it, because I'm sure the listeners are interested in its background because you've talked a bit about its history and being a library and from the 18th century and the very, very expensive tiles that are on the floor in it.
So the Earl built it as a library and he built it, initially he began to build it with a roof observatory up into the stars, but he decided along the way, I suppose the best thing is saying that Bishop, he was an eccentric character. He used to host these dining experiences also inside Downhill Castle as well. So for me, it's like that history comes alive in the experiences the minute you bring a concert in. So it was built as a library, really. They do have all these stories of built for his niece and different things. For me, it was built, you know, because he had that extravagance, he could. And he built something at the edge of the cliff in the 18th century. So that takes someone who has a lot of creativity, insights, and slightly, you know, he was ahead of his time. One of the things that we learned recently was as the famine ships was going out, so this is it, he was bringing back red wood to build a bridge in Derry, Londonderry. So, you know, he had real foresight. He built the first road into. So I suppose the Earl Bishop Hervey, I think he deserves, you know, like a bit of the talk rather than the building itself, because he created that one building, but he also created, you know, Downhill Castle, and he also did a lot for the area. And I suppose one of the biggest things that we learned from that is he was just eccentric, I think. And you know, and it takes creativity, and I think that comes through now. So, you know, we look at the experiences that we have inside, and it's just an amazing experience that we have. And it's allowed us to be able to become one of the top luxury providers, you know, for travel experiences in the whole of Ireland as well at the moment, too. So, you know, it's an amazing experience, an amazing location.
Well, you talk about the Earl deserving a lot of credit, Claire. I think you deserve a lot of credit for carrying on his legacy in some respects, because it is such an impressive experience that you've worked very hard to create and get off the ground. And I feel I was very privileged to visit the temple
Oh.
Nietzsche on the trip there. So thanks so much for hosting me a couple of weeks ago, and congratulations on such a wonderful experience, and best of luck for the summer season ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us, Sharon. It was a pleasure to share it with you. And for anybody who wants to find out more, you can find some details on Musidon Sea Salt website. So that's Musidon, MUSSENDEN, seasalt.com.
You're listening to the best possible taste on West Limerick 102 FM.